You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. I'm sorry that I doubted you. I was so unfair. You were in a car crash and you lost your hair. Now, those are actual lyrics from a Beatles song. An actual Beatles song. The clue is it was written by Ringo Starr. Don't pass me by. Well, I think if you don't mind Ringo, we will. I just get the feeling John and Paul were humouring him that day. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Ringo Starr because it's been a big week for Bayou Liu and indeed Liam Davis. Two players are going to be on the World Snooker Tour next season. Bayou Liu won the Women's World Championship in China. And Liam Davis, the European Championship, he won the junior event there. Now, he's been knocking on the door a long time. He's only 17, but he feels like he's been knocking on the door a long time. Came up short last week in the Q Tour playoffs, 10-9 to Dwayne Jones. So that was a disappointment, but he bounced back. And a lot of people feel that he could be a real prospect. I mean, we always have to... It always comes with a health warning, sort of tipping young players, you know, to go on and have a great career. But there's a lot of people who will certainly be following his results with interest, so well done to him. And as for Bayou Liu, well, it was a very exciting finish to the final. A long final, it's got to be said, over 7 hours against Mick Nutcherat. Played in a big arena in China. Quite a few people there, something like 800 people watching. It was streamed live. Good viewing on Sunday morning. And Bayou Liu, she made 122 break earlier in the final, highest ever break in a women's final. So clearly, you know, she is a prospect. She's only 20. Shares my birthday, but that's neither here nor there. But anyway, be interested to see her on tour next year. And again, you know, we don't want to start making too many predictions, but clearly for a young female player from China, she is someone who is going to be well worth following in terms of what she may be able to do. Some of the other female players, not all of them, but some of them who've turned pro have been a bit older, but she is at the age where you think she could improve. It's a big step up to the pro ranks. You know, she's got the chance. She's got the two-year card. A lot of people I know watched the Women's World Championship and enjoyed it, and it looked like a big event and something of a step forward, I think, to have it in a proper arena. With a lot of people watching, support from the Chinese authorities as well. You know, it's a prize ceremony. I did keep the YouTube stream on. I mean, that was quite something. It may still be going on, I don't know. But a lot of people involved in that. But anyway, I enjoyed it. But not everybody has necessarily good things to say. Donald Murtagh writes, I've been watching the Women's World Championship, and I have to say, the quality of the coverage is a disgrace. Given that this is the highest profile tournament in the women's game, we should expect better than a single fixed camera with very poor audio-video quality and no commentary. Even if they can't afford to pay a commentator, surely someone would volunteer, given that the matches are relatively short. Not good enough. Well, that's Donald, very trenchant. Look, obviously, we're used to very high-quality coverage of the professional game. This, I think, was a step forward for the women's game. In previous years, it wasn't possible to watch the World Championship. There was more than one camera. They didn't cut to it very often, it's got to be said. There was definitely at least one floor camera because they did now and again cut to it. But actually, I quite like being able to see the whole table. One of the complaints people have about television coverage is actually there's too much cutting away or replays, and you don't actually know where the cue ball is and what's happening on the table. So it's quite nice, actually, to be able to watch the whole table. Commentary, it's not necessarily paying someone. You need the separate equipment to do it. You need, you know, the sort of proper audio setup, which again incurs more cost. So I think this was, well, better than nothing sounds not like a compliment, but, you know, in previous years, the Women's World Championship had been played in complete anonymity. That was not the case this year, and I think it's a step forward, and maybe next year the coverage will improve. But actually, as I say, I was watching the final. I enjoyed the experience of watching it. I found myself sort of commentating, which is not a good thing to admit, but sort of saying things out loud and realising I didn't actually have a microphone. Anyway, listen, I think that tournament can get bigger, and maybe, you know, it can be, if there's sufficient interest, certainly with a Chinese player winning it now, maybe Chinese television would be interested next year, who knows? And if they are, then they can sell that to other broadcasters around the world. Who knows where it could lead? The Women's World Championship was on television in the 90s. Barry Hearn promoted it and got it on Sky for a couple of years. So it's not unprecedented that it's had television coverage. When they played it at the Crucible those years, they would record the final and show highlights of it. So, you know, it's not, as I say, unprecedented for it to be on television. I'm sure that's the ambition and the aim, but it's not kind of as simple as clicking your fingers, I suppose. We've had a lot of emails about iconic Crucible moments, and we're going to save them for a future episode. I don't like to say special episode because it might not be, but there'll be an episode in the future. Keep them coming in that case, because we want to hear your own personal iconic moments of the Crucible ahead of the championship, which of course will be underway a month today. As we speak now, in a month's time, the Crucible will once again be underway, and the matches and the drama and all the rest of it. The other thing I asked last time, and by the way, the listening figures we've had in are sensational, and that sounds like crowing, but they're up. The figures are up, and I don't know why, because let's be honest, it's not the quality of the podcast, but people are listening in big numbers, and that's, I think, just reflects and represents a general uptick in the interest in snooker. We've seen it in viewing figures, we've seen it in live attendances. I think media coverage now as well, I've noticed more and more. I know there's one newspaper that are actually planning a pullout ahead of the World Championship, a 48-page pullout about the World Championship, which we've not seen that for decades. So there's definitely more interest, and it's reflected in people listening to this podcast and indeed corresponding. So the other thing I asked was musical memories of snooker, and we've had a lot in, none of them involving Ringo Starr, mercifully. But Sat Jinder here, he writes, "I hope you're doing well. Congratulations on your now world-famous podcast. It's great to see a Walsall lad doing well." And that's from a born and bred Wolfrunian, Wolverhampton, for those who don't understand that. Well, thank you. I mean, the world-famous might be pushing it a little bit, but that's kind of you. He says, "My music memories are heavily influenced by the BBC snooker montage at the end of the 90s, presented by the legendary David Vine." So I would say, heroes, David Bowie, clips of Reardon and Spencer. Gold, Slipped Band Our Ballet. The Nuggets, Decade of Domination. Dreams, The Cause, The Widowed of Wishaw, ending Hendry's 90s dominance through not directly by winning the Worlds in 98 and taking his much coveted world number one spot, all during the same tournament. Keep up the good work and up the Sablers. Well, thank you, Sat Jinder. We've got Dwayne Murray on the same subject. First, it says, "All time listener, first time mailer, thanks for all you do. I remember times I longed for snooker news and had to rely on the snippets. Newspapers occasionally added when matches reached a climax. How times have changed. I waited patiently for Pot Black and Snooker Scene monthly publications in between. I had to write in, during the BBC World Championships, during the final, the BBC would show a snooker extravaganza musical montage. The song by Queen, These Are the Days of Our Lives, and The Police, Every Breath You Take. These songs transport me back to sitting watching the finals, full of hope for Jimmy White, and then tears." Well, thank you, Dwayne. Yes, I mean, you're right about These Are the Days of Our Lives, the Queen song. Well, it's kind of, I think the first one that I connected to was The Way We Were. Now, of course, famously, that was cut together by Ray Stubbs, who people will remember as a sports presenter. But in his younger days, he was a BBC sort of production man, and he did that Barbra Streisand the montage that they cut together, which is I always think they could update that. They could do a new one because that's nearly 40 years old. But These Are the Days of Our Lives. That was 92, I think, and it featured some of the older players like Doug Mountjoy and Terry Griffiths, and you know, the people we were used to seeing, sort of suggesting they're on their way out, and then the new brigade coming through. Peter Ebdon, Alan McManus, Mick Price was on it. it's over 30 years ago now, but it was very, it's quite an emotional song, and it fitted it really well. And then the Police one, Every Breath You Take, I think that was, I'm going to say 94 without checking. Because I remember, the one I remember, they were quite literal sometimes, those montages. So there's a bit in the song, Every Bond You Break, and they would literally have a shot of Nigel Bond. But anyway, the thing about those montages, they came at the end of the tournament. You know, you'd invested a lot of time in the tournament, obviously 17 days. And it can be a bit of an emotional rollercoaster, certainly, as Dwayne says there, if you're a Jimmy White fan in those days. You get to the end and, you know, you see the results of the 17 days you spent in front of the telly. And yeah, they're very memorable. And I remember we were at the UK Championship actually this season. And Sean Murphy, I don't think you mind me saying, he got a few of them up on his phone and we were watching them. And they are still very resonant. And those songs, if I hear that Queen song, certainly, I think of that montage. I don't think of Freddie Mercury. I think of, as you say, David Vine. Now, Guy has written in, I'm emailing to answer your call for musical memories associated with snooker. Mine is linked to something which used to form part of the BBC's World Championship coverage. So this is the same sort of thing we're going on here, the montages. He says, in the late 90s and early 2000s, to fill time during the intervals of the final, the BBC would show a montage of the history of the World Championship at the Crucible with musical accompaniment. The idea was that the music was of the time period and related in some way to the footage being shown. For example, Gold by Spandau Ballet was played during the Davis years. This was presumably due to his record of success and it being a vague reference to his hair colour. What I recall most strongly is how the lyrics did not always match and in fact sometimes contradicted what was being shown on screen. For instance, just as Tony Hadley was belting out "You're Indestructible," there was a clip of Davis missing a pot. Similarly, Into the Valley by the Skids accompanied footage of Terry Griffiths with the text on the screen stating, "Out of the valleys came qualified Terry Griffiths," as opposed to "Into the Valley." It must have slightly bothered me as it stuck in my mind and was reinforced by the repeated showings of the montage over several years, with the previous year's championship tacked on to the end each time. As a consequence, whenever I hear the songs used for the montage, it instantly transports me back to the footage. I can't hear "Things Can Only Get Better" by D. Ream without thinking of a young, bemulleted Stephen Hendry. I'd be interested to know if you or any other listeners have any memory of this montage. I've tried a YouTube search to find it, but to no avail, although I realise we're in fairly niche territory. Well, if it's niche territory you're after, you're listening to the right podcast. Well, Guy, I don't actually... Things Gonna Get Better by D. Ream, I only now associate with New Labour, because they used to play that when Tony Blair was at, you know, some rally at that constantly during 97. So that's kind of, I don't say soured my memories of it, but it's dominated them, certainly. I don't recall... I don't recall that montage, and I don't see it anywhere on YouTube. But people listening, let's be honest, you're in the right place. If anyone does know of that and can find it, then you're in the right place. These montages clearly have struck a chord. And I suppose the question is, you know, why don't they do them now? On ITV, they do at the end of every tournament. Of course, it's not 17 days, but at the end of every tournament, there's a montage. Martin Reardon, who's been on this podcast, actually, the VT coordinator, cuts them together brilliantly. I mean, there's no one better than Martin at that. But obviously, it's slightly different because it's a week's tournament and it's not the World Championship. But there are still montages out there. But clearly, some of these early ones, we're talking 80s and 90s, have stayed with people very much. Cameron Hutton. She says, I've decided to write in about a couple of things after listening to the latest episode of the podcast. My first is in response to the music we associate with snooker. My very specific example considers the song My Desire by Interpol. This was played over the end credits of the BBC's coverage of the 2022 World Championship Final, with said credits showing Ronnie O'Sullivan's various victories at the Crucible before lifting his seventh title. The song itself has a nice indie rock sound, whilst the lyrics worked nicely in tandem, relating well to Ronnie's complex character. It also fit well with what was an emotional high at the end of an absolutely brilliant World Championship. Because of this, I now sit and wait for the credits to roll on every subsequent BBC-covered event to see what the music what music they use. Recent examples include Coldplay's Speed of Sound, used at the end of the recent Masters, and Shed Seven's Talk of the Town at the end of the UK Championship. Now, Cameron also gives us his iconic moments of the cruise, but we'll save those for a later, as I say, a later podcast. Thank you very much. The bottom line is, so much of the music that people remember or associate with snooker is actually associated with television, very, very clearly. So it's not necessarily what was number one when, you know, Dennis Taylor won the World Championship. It's more how the BBC marked it and that sort of relationship people have to the television experience of snooker clearly is absolutely central to why the game has been and continues to be so successful. Now, Tim in Nottingham writes, long-time listener, first-time writer, given all the talk about how long players like Ronnie can keep winning for, can I refer you back to the last few minutes of episode 12 of your podcast? Episode 12, I think that was in black and white. Anyway, Tim says that Dominic Dale was spot on with what he said. No one knows because the current generation, so this is talking about how long they can go on for, Dominic said no one knows because the current generation are fitter, better technically and practice properly. Controversially, he said players in the old days were rubbish. What's a little harsh, I do tend to agree. Well, yes, he kind of did say that, but I think what he meant was technically they were not as proficient as the players now, because obviously they didn't have, we're talking about the players who came through in the 70s, they didn't have players to model themselves on that they watched, you know, religiously on television. They kind of had to work it out themselves. We'll move on to Andrew. Now, Andrew's actually talking about the Crucible, but he did, had a dream here. Now, of course, I had a dream that John Higgins is going to play Sean Murphy. I had it twice in the final. And, we'll see, won't we, if that comes to fruition or not. But he says, if I had to pick a winner at this exact moment, I'd go out on a limb and tip Ronnie to lift the trophy. However, similar to you, I also had a dream about the tournament. In my dream, Rob Walker exhorted the Crucible crowd to give it up for the new world champion, Chow Yupeng, who I dare say would be the most surprising winner in the history of the sport. That was a far more joyous atmosphere than the earlier portion of my dream, which saw Anthony McGill and Ding Junhui give each other a warm embrace before resuming play after a delay necessitated by Stuart Bingham collapsing while playing on the other table. This seems to be a suitable place to state I do not believe that dreams have any sort of predictive or prophetic qualities, and to also state that I do not wish any ill will towards Stuart, or indeed to any player. That is actually one of the more straightforward snooker dreams I've had. Since this email has probably gone on too long, I will save my other dreams for correspondence over the summer when there's less going on. Well, there's a lot to process there, Andrew. As you say, it's only a dream, and I'm sure Stuart... Firstly, you've got to qualify for the Crucible. What I would say is a lot of people have collapsed there, but not quite in the way that you mean. McGill and Ding embracing. We might gloss over that, but anyway, do let us know any other dreams that you have that you think we might want to hear about. Brian McGovern, he said, I'm watching here the World Open after Zach Surety made the maximum. The question I have is, which player has been at the receiving end of most maximums? I know Neil Foles tweeted that Zach has been at the receiving end of two of them. I love the podcast and greetings from the Emerald Isle. Well, thank you, Brian. Yes, well, firstly, I mean, Zach Surety's previous highest break was 136. So quite incredible that he would... come out and it's not just making the maximum. That's one thing, and it's very impressive. But it's more where he did it and the circumstances by which he did it. He did it in China. It was a night session, absolutely packed. Let's be honest, most of them there to watch Ding and to support Ding. Going out live on television around the world. Quite incredible that he would go out there, not only make the maximum, but shatter his highest ever break. Great for him. Brilliant for him. The answer to your question, who's been on the receiving end of most maximums, is Mark Selby, who has sat out eight of them. I mean, there's no logic as to why it would be him. He's a player who doesn't give you much. So, it's not like he sort of smashed the balls open for you. Quite the opposite. But, he's played a lot of snooker, hasn't he, I suppose. That's the thing. It's got to be someone. And Mark Selby, to answer your question, has been on the receiving end of eight maximums. Now, David Meyer says, I think it's finally time to rally to change Jack Mazowski's nickname. See, the big issues are being discussed here on this podcast. He said, although Jackpot reflects the unpredictable nature of his sometimes sublime form, I think the Dude is so much more fitting. By all accounts, including yours, he's an extraordinarily pleasant chap. Combined with the Big Lebowski reference, I think it's very fitting. Well, thank you, David. I mean, I don't know. There's not such a committee that changed the nicknames or indeed decided in the first place. I mean, it used to be, obviously, you know, players didn't really have nicknames going back. The likes of Hurricane Higgins, Whirlwind White. They kind of developed them. And a lot of it was to put on exhibition posters. You know, you could literally hype up the fact, oh, you know, the Hurricanes here and all that. More recently now, it seems everyone's got to have one. I quite admire Ricky Walden, who refuses to have one. He won't get involved with that. Because some of them are no good, let's be honest. Now, Jack Lazowski, Jackpot, I think he's actually quite good. He's one of the better ones because it's very simple and it does relate to snooker, the pot element, and Jack is his name. The Dude, I suppose, it's quite a clever one. He takes a bit of explaining. I mean, the one of the all-time great ones, of course, was Joe Swale. Alan Hughes, the great MC, came up with The Outlaw, based on the film The Outlaw, Josie Wales. And it's basically, if you mangle Joe Swale's name, you get The Outlaw. This is a little simpler than that, but here's the thing, okay, and this is controversial, but, you know, we don't hide from controversial opinions. I don't think The Big Lebowski is any good as a film. Certainly compared to a lot of the other Coen Brothers films. No Country for Old Men, Barton Fink, Blood Simple, Hail Caesar, all very good films. I'm not sure The Big Lebowski is. Now, you know, Mark Kermode might be out there saying, well, what do you know? But, well, I suppose you can only really change it through usage. So if there's a groundswell and people, you know, march on Parliament and get the placards out and demand it, maybe it will change. What Jack thinks about that, I don't know. I suspect probably he doesn't care. That would be my suggestion. Very nice guy. I'm sure he's polite enough. If you said to him, Jack would change your nickname, I suspect he would just say, okay, do what you want. Needless to say, in the way this podcast is planned, I missed out Martin Eccles talking about music. So we'll go back to that now. He said, on the subject of songs associated with snooker, I remember a BCE event many moons ago with Steve Davis playing superbly. They showed him playing some clash shots to Sade, Smooth Operator. I've never forgotten this. Meanwhile, I'm watching the semi-finals of the Women's World Championship with Rhiann Evans playing some incredible snooker. The only problem is the chirping noise from birds. What's all that about? Yeah, I don't know what that was, Martin, but on the substantial point, it's worth saying the BCE event, that would have been ITV. So that, you know, they did the montages as well. If anyone could sort of cut together a YouTube video of all these montages, I think that's all I'd ever watch on YouTube. Now Richard, he's been updating us on his travels around the world, visiting snooker clubs, and we'll get to that shortly. But he's also, Richard Bassey, given us some musical memories. He says, the songs that remind me of snooker, and again, this is partly related to montages. He says, nobody does it better, Carly Simon. The BBC did a montage to it during one of the World Championships in the 80s with Steve Davis the subject throughout the accompanying video. It was so fitting, I'll never forget it. And Jack and Diane, John Cougar Mellencamp, he says, I just remember this being played a lot in the Coral Snooker Club in Broughton, Salford, where I used to practice and compete during my university years. For some reason, the feeling and fire in the song seemed to hit my ears as I played and made me feel some percentage better as I continued to hit balls. I've sometimes reflected how odd it was that such a piece of Americana in a location like working class Salford should combine to affect me so. Well, I suppose you throw in the magic ingredient of snooker, and that's what you get. Anyway, Richard, he's been... I think I accused him of being on the run at one point. But anyway, this is an update on his travels. He said, my Euro travels continue from Austria east to Slovakia, where I found nowhere I could play snooker in the 2 days I spent there. But on arriving in Budapest from there, the story was very different. It was a venue just a two-minute walk from my room. It was very busy and a touristy place, cash only, and the general maintenance of the tables and equipment reflected the high turnover of casual visitors to the place. I ventured out by train to the outskirts of Budapest to a club, and how my heart danced at the vision before me, a room of star tables in wonderful condition, playing beautifully. The room itself was very quiet, with players having the kind of reverence for such an environment you hope for. You can also tell a lot about a club by the condition and maintenance of facilities. There's an enthusiasm in the Budapest scene, I would say, rivals that of Vienna, and they regularly fly out the very elite for exhibitions here, like Ronnie, Mark Allen and John Higgins. While there are fewer tables at this venue than in Vienna, the city itself should be perfectly capable of hosting and financially supporting a WST tournament whether ranking or invitational. Exhibitions comfortably sell out, for example, and the local players I saw in the club were taking care in their play, pre-shot routines and overall approach in what appeared to be Saturday evening friendly games. And he's appended a video and also the link to the snooker club. Yeah, I mean, these parts of Europe, you know, snooker is very popular. It's not just about tickets, though. I mean, if you to get a tournament on, you know, the number one thing you need is television. And that's, you know, that's the holy grail, really, to get a broadcaster really first before you even get a venue or anything like that. But it's nice to hear. To keep us apprised, if that's the word, of your other ventures, of Richard, I'm sure you will. But we now come to probably the most popular part of the podcast. And don't say the end. It's banal meetings with snooker players. And if you're new to the podcast, these are exactly as it sounds. It's meetings with snooker players where not much chat has been exchanged, and not a lot has been said. But it's all a rich tapestry. And Mark Higgins has written in. He said, "I've loved your podcast for the last year or two. Just thought I'd let you know about not one, but probably hundreds of banal meetings with just one professional snooker player. I used to play snooker pretty much every day at a club in the West Midlands where Rhian Evans practices. Most days of the week after work, I'd be having a couple of frames with my mate while Rhian was in her personal practice room a few metres away. Every time she'd walk past, as I was playing a particularly terrible shot, I'd look up and go high, and she'd go all right. This probably happened nearly every day for years. I did have a few more conversations with her involving a few more sentences over the years, but that was our daily banal meeting. If she's listening, I was the pest control man on table 14. She'll know who I am. Keep up the good work." Well, thank you, Mark. And there's a lot there, actually. There's a lot there. The pest control business. Now, that suggests you're a trained killer. Well, that's exactly what we want, really. Just, you know, there's nothing meaningful being said, and that's the root of it all. Now we have another one here, Nikki Tier. Living in Sheffield as I do, April and early May is always a fruitful season for banal meetings with snooker players. I've had several spots of Ronnie running, Judd and his cool mates in trackies with their takeaway costas, and Ken out for a meal. But I'd like to suggest a couple that are slight twists on the theme. I was in the city centre with a non-snooker fan last year when I was suddenly taken by the familiar and, of course, very lovely sight walking towards me. "Oh, my God, it's Vicky Selby," I said to my non-plus friend. Only after this did I notice that next to her stood 4-time world champion and all-time great Mark Selby. He was also looking lovely, but I think the fact that he was resplendent in jeans and a green anorak was the reason I noticed Vicky first. She gave a smile and they carried on shopping. Although I've always loved snooker, I became increasingly invested in it over lockdown, discovering things like your glorious podcast, which very much adds to the joy of life, so thank you so much. This increased attention led to me being very excited at the 2021 tournament when I pointed out, this time to a very knowledgeable snooker-loving friend, someone I recognised standing outside the Crucible, looking splendid in trademark red heels. Had it been Michaela Tabb, Seema, or I dare say Alison Fisher, then he would have recognised her, but instead he looked as blank as my snooker heathen friend did at the sight of Mark Selby, when I exclaimed, "Look, it's Kelly Barker." He said, "I can't wait even for even fuller indulgence in your commentary, observations and wit as the season reaches its high point." Thank you, Nikki. Well, of course, Kelly is a big snooker fan and very much a fixture at the Crucible. So she's now joined this list of people who've been spotted and not spoken to. I like the fact that you recognise Vicky rather than Mark Selby there. But anyway, keep them coming in. The more banal, the better. Now, we have next in this, I dare say, smorgasbord of entertainment, who do we have? We have our dear friend Lars Johansson. He says, "Thanks as always for the work you do through your podcast and commentating. Apologies if this has been discussed previously, but I was thinking, with your vast knowledge of the game and its surrounding parts, would it be possible for you to create a list of movie, documentary, book, music recommendations on the topic of snooker? I've listened to lots of your back catalogue and other podcasts too, and every once in a while a book or documentary or even song album is mentioned. I never have the wherewithal to act quickly and note it down as I listen, so they tend to be forgotten, lost somewhere in my less than optimally functioning memory bank. Additionally, I'm also curious which websites you visit regularly as you stay connected to the new side of snooker, not counting snooker.org or qtracker.net, as they are stats databases more than anything else. I've bookmarked WST, BBC, Eurosport, Metro, Sporting Life, and recently Snooker HQ, sites I now visit daily to see what's going on. Do you have any other recommendations or sources other than Twitter? That's right, I refuse to call it by the other name. I'm on there, but rarely visit. As for podcasts, I think I have all that are currently active in my collection. Number one on the list is obviously Snooker Scene. Then also Framed, Snooker Club, Talking Snooker, The 147, Snooker Loopy. Should there be any others I've missed, please enlighten me as I'm always looking to consume more snooker. As for Crucible predictions, it's almost impossible for me not to go with what my heart wants, which is Mark Selby winning his fifth title. While he's not had the best of seasons, in part due to the off-table reasons, I see his game improving plenty as of late, which is win in the Championship League verifies. Totally different format and all that, but still a proper tournament win against very strong opponents. As you rightly pointed out in your last podcast as well, while commentating, his scoring has been great lately. We know Selby will always be one of the names discussed at the Crucible. His record speaks for itself in that regard, and I think it can be a good thing he's had a bit of a lull, expectations lowered and such, and now he can come from behind and stop Ronnie from reaching the ultimate climax of the season, 8-8-8. That said, as the main favourite, I must hold Ronnie. Simple is like that, even though I don't like it. I don't understand that sentence, but anyway, he's a master at the game, and I would be really surprised if he, at the very least, didn't reach the final. The whole season is sort of leaning in that direction, isn't it? With his wins in the UK Championship and Masters, being the oldest and youngest, etc., getting the eighth in both of those. Only thing missing is to make this the snooker ultimate fairy tale. There's the eighth Crucible title to separate himself from Hendry at seven. Exciting times ahead. Anyway, to the point, here are my predictions. Most likely I rank Ronnie O'Sullivan, after that Selby, Trump and Mark Allen in that order. Outsiders, Jack Lazowski, Gary Wilson, Ali Carter and Zhang Ander. The coming 2 months are full of action. I can't wait to consume as much of it as possible. Go snooker. Well, thank you, Lars. Very excited at the end there, got to be said, and that's fine. It was interesting. Ronnie in China was asked this by the Chinese press, and are you going for the eighth? And there's a lot of scenarios in Britain, particularly in TV studios, where he would pour cold water on all of that and say the opposite, but he's always on his best behaviour out there, and he answered the question properly, and it's the only answer you can give, which of course I want to win it, because he does. And he's the favourite, absolutely. Absolutely the favourite. In terms of your other points you make, I don't have a list as such, but if you're going to watch a film about snooker, you have to start with, you know, the Citizen Kane of snooker films, which, of course, is number one. Now, we've discussed number one many times. It's 40 years old now. Bob Geldof essentially playing Alex Higgins. I don't know whether it's streaming, but you'll find it somewhere. It may even be on YouTube. It's an extraordinary film. I mean, it's no good objectively, but there's a lot in it. John Williams plays himself as a referee, but is replaced for the final by the musical comedian Freddie Parrotface Davis, who was not known for snooker refereeing. Great cast, some real big hitters of the British film industry in it. I won't spoil what happens at the end, but it is ludicrous. But anyway, that's where you've got to start. Of course, Billy the Kid and the Green Bay's Vampire was another film around the same time. It's a bit scattershot because we've discussed a lot about snooker in the culture. So you'll see sitcoms like Sorry and Ever Decreasing Circles where they played snooker. You'll see films where Sleuth is one with Laurence Olivier and Michael Caine. They're playing snooker in that. It sort of crops up in all sorts of places. There was a novel about snooker by Lionel Shriver, and she's a well-regarded author. Post-Birthday World, it's called. I'm not sure how good it was, but anyway. So maybe, and this is me slightly passing the buck, maybe if other people have lists that they want to contribute to where you can find snooker in the culture, then do write in, by all means. I mean, obviously we know that, the Matchroom Mob and all that, and Alex Higgins had records out, but this is more snooker where you're not expecting to see it, I suppose. In terms of a question about where to find information, I would say trust the teller, not the tale. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of stuff out there about snooker online, but I think the thing to do is look at the bylines and who's written them. There are people who are close to the action and there are people who aren't. So, for example, in newspapers, if you see bylines, Phil Haig, Shane McDermott, Neil Goulding, Rob Moore from The Sun, Nick Metcalf, These are all people who spend time on the circuit, spend time at tournaments, they know the players, they're kind of inside the ropes, as it were, they're around the scene. There are other people who write stories who have never been to a tournament, and essentially a lot of what they write is based not necessarily on what's happening, but on how people on social media are reacting to what's happening. And these stories, I don't think, add very much to the game or the enjoyment of the game. So, for example, it can literally be, if John Higgins has a fluke in a tournament, snooker fans can't believe how lucky John Higgins was, and there's, you know, 6 tweets quoted in a story about the fact he had a fluke. That's not a news story. That's just a waste of everybody's time. There's a difference between opinion and insight. Anyone can have an opinion, and increasingly, I think, in this day and age, the maxim, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, applies. You don't need to have any real knowledge of a subject to have an opinion on it. Insight is different. That comes from actually being around the area, knowing the people involved in it, and having more of a balanced view of it, because you understand more about it, I guess. So if you're reading stories or listening to podcasts or whatever you're doing, think about who it is that's telling you the story. I'm a great fan of the mainstream media. It's incredible to me how that phrase is now used in a derogatory fashion. The mainstream media. What, you mean people who are qualified in journalism and have reached a level where people will pay them? Reputable broadcasters and newspapers will pay them for their expertise. Well, count me in then, in that case, in the mainstream. You know, if your toilet's leaking, you don't say, oh, I'm not going to get a qualified plumber. Oh, Brian on Twitter can fix it. No. And I don't see any difference in the world of journalism. The sites you've quoted are all certainly worth visiting. I think we need a bit more independent journalism in snooker, but unfortunately it's just the way the media landscape has gone. A lot of people qualify as journalists and end up actually just sat, literally, as I say, scrolling through social media for stories. It's a bit of a shame, really. And also now, so many stories you see online, it's clickbait, effectively. So Ronnie O'Sullivan is the most popular player in the game. He appears in so many headlines in stories that have nothing to do with him. I was reading one earlier. Ali Carter was on the World Snooker podcast, and he said something along the lines of he thinks this is his best chance to become world champion. And this was written up as Ronnie O'Sullivan rival stakes world championship claim. Didn't even mention Ali Carter in the headline. Mentioned Ronnie O'Sullivan because you're more likely to click on the story because of that. And the counterintuitive thing about that makes it less likely that there's anything worth reading. I mean, there's always been a sort of clickbait sort of thing about newspapers themselves, you know, banner headlines that suck you in. But now, so much of it is a waste of time, honestly. It really is. That's my view of it. Now, Kevin Ipswich has written on a different subject. He said, in a recent podcast, episode 289, Tony Finnegan mentioned a rather unfortunate incident where he approached the then snooker player Steve James asking his autograph and was met with F off, and I've cleaned that up, Cav. He said, I must admit that encounter made me smile, and though almost certainly upsetting at the time for Tony, reinforces my view that Steve James was one of the snooker's lesser revered mavericks. At this point, it's time for a quick digression on the fascinating etymology of the word maverick. Excuse me. He says, the word comes from Samuel Maverick, the Texas politician, lawyer and rancher who refused to brand his cattle, meaning that they could roam free. In time, the use of maverick expanded from unbranded cattle to anyone that shows independence in thoughts or actions. Now, you see, Cav here has given us this. This would be enough for most podcasts. In fact, most podcasts would be charging for this. But here we are. Not only are we talking snooker, but we're actually giving people information. I didn't know that, so that's all fascinating, Cav. Anyway, he says, now back to Steve James. After all, this is a form for snooker, I hear you say. I haven't watched Steve James play since the early 90s, but what I can recall is he played with verve and take on a pot, take on and pot crazy long shots, a bit like Judd Trump does now. He also has the remarkable achievement of being the only man to beat Stephen Hendry at the Crucible between 1990 and 1997. So in 37 matches, he was the only one to beat the King of the Crucible until Ken Doherty finally did in the 1997 final. Though James wasn't at the top for long, he always seemed a maverick that was more interested in motorbikes than snooker. In fact, a quick read of his Wikipedia page only supports my view, as 2 things I didn't know about Steve James were, number 1, he started off as a postman, and number 2, in 1990 against Alex Higgins at the World Championship, he became the first player to get a 16 red total clearance in competitive play. All of this got me thinking about other snooker mavericks. Alex Higgins is an obvious example, and so is Ronnie, but he is also an all-time great, so in some sense transcends the word maverick, as he's more in the genius category. Excluding those two, I'd be interested in hearing yours and fellow listeners' thoughts on who they would class as snooker mavericks. Here are three others that spring to my mind. Number one, Kirk Stevens. Number two, Cliff Wilson. And number three, Luca Brasel. Incidentally, Luca is my pick for the World Championship this year. This is just so we can end this curse of the Crucible Scooby-Doo-style nonsense. Folsy, take note. And recycling back to Steve James, it was him that beat Hendry in 91 to ensure the curse continues to this day. P.S. In the most recent podcast, episode 292, you mentioned the passing of Carl Wallinger from Will Party, which was sad. That's certainly a band I listened to back in the 90s as well. See picture of my vinyl 7-inch record attached. I too used to savour the experience of saving up and buying new records. Anyway, enough of this 1990s reminiscing about World Party and Steve James. Well, in my mind, Cav, you can't have too much reminiscing about World Party and Steve James, and indeed the 1990s. But yes, thank you. You attached the picture of the record there. The Scooby-Doo thing with Neil there is a callback to a different time. But anyway, he wrote in with his own Scooby-Doo story about the curse. Anyway, yeah, Kirk Stevens, Cliff Wilson and Luca Brasel. Yes, I mean, I think they all kind of apply. Kirk obviously had the completely different sort of way of presenting himself, the white suit, which not everyone can carry off. I mean, he was a good-looking man, Kirk Stevens, no getting away from that. And he could carry it off. He was young and exciting. Cliff Wilson, definitely. Extraordinary player, actually. I mean, he gave up playing for a long time and then came back to it. He couldn't see properly, but one of the great potters. Whenever you see either Shot of the Championship or Hot Shots compilations from the 80s, he's always in them. He's always in them, knocking in an extraordinarily long ball, you know, in the way we associate with Judd Trump when he's playing exhibition shots. Cliff Wilson had played them when the frame was live. And Luca, I think, as well, Luca Brasel definitely has just a different way of playing. I think mavericks, there has to be, I mean, Quinton Hand was a bit of a maverick, but not always in a good way. They tend to a certain degree to maybe not quite have reached their potential. I mean, Kirk Stevens didn't win a major tournament. Cliff Wilson, he's world seniors champion, but I mean, Luca obviously is world champion. There's no getting away from that, but hasn't been a consistent winner. So maybe because mavericks do it, as you say, you sort of count it out, Ronnie O'Sullivan, they do it a different way. They don't always, they might reach the top, they maybe don't always stay there. But anyway, anyone with any names who think fit the bill, let us know. Now, the final email this week, it's a long one, I've got to be honest, but that's fine, from Joe Richards. And this is what Joe says. I hope you're well. The strength of the snooker tour calendar currently is phenomenal. World Snooker Tour and Matchroom deserve a lot of credit when you consider how they navigated COVID and how they've regained momentum in China. I wondered if you knew what happened to the China Open and if there are any plans to return to Beijing. It's strange how there's no tournament since COVID. Has the World Open replaced this event? Well, just on that, Joe, I don't know if the China Open's coming back. It does seem the obvious one to bring back, but, you know, at the moment it isn't, and that's just a fact. But it may be that, you know, in China they're now focusing on other areas, maybe new areas for growth. The World Open hasn't replaced it, no, but it's a fact the China Open at the moment is not back on the calendar. Joe continues, I'm wondering if the strength number of tournaments in the UK is now actually holding the tour back globally, as crazy as that sounds. Well, obviously, this is a good problem to have. I wonder if the UK tour is a bit saturated and if there could be room for some lower level ranked tournaments in the UK, which gives medium ranked players like Gary Wilson a chance to win tournaments they may not usually win. You never see Djokovic, Nadal or Federer at an ATP 250 event, so I feel a similar setup could work in snooker, where they almost combine the Challenger Tour with some of the lower ranking tournaments. This would possibly extend the professional game to 250 players rather than 128. The increased money at the top could do this, as long as they say the top 16 players all have to play in two home nations each. That would mean at least Trump or Ronnie would still support ticket sales. It's almost like it's better having O'Sullivan in Northern Ireland and Wales and Trump in Scotland and England rather than having them both going to the same event, both being absent from two events. This will be a clever solution to keep players like O'Sullivan happy by saying you don't have to play in them all, but compulsory that you play in two. Just on that, I mean, I think that would actually create an absolute hornet's nest if you were saying you literally, I mean, at the moment they don't have to play in anything, actually. There's no, you're not forced to play in any tournament. And your idea would be forcing them to play in tournaments, and I think that could actually lead to trouble. But anyway, we continue with Joe's email. With some big players opting out of the home nations, I wonder if they're almost becoming second-tier tournaments, or that's the way they're heading, which again shows the strength of the tour, that players are opting out wanting to win 80,000 due to superior invitation events. I wonder if the ITV series could become a global event and the UK events being reduced to the Triple Crown, Scottish, Welsh and Northern Ireland Open, and discontinue the English-British Open on the basis England already has three massive tournaments. I genuinely think if a cutthroat businessman like Donald Trump in his apprentice days would say to the English-British Open, you're fired, I think England is a bit overkill currently when you also factor in the Championship League too. Cancel that while they're at it. This seems a lot of tournaments being cancelled here, but anyway, we continue. I feel like World Snooker Tour has outgrown places like Gibraltar, and I wonder if snooker should be in places like Las Vegas compared to Clandidno. Although I think Clandidno is a cool place, I feel snooker could outgrow it. I'm surprised the Hong Kong event is gone. I wonder if they could build on the strength of the tour and take a few gambles now. For example, we could have the World Grand Prix in Rome, Vienna, India, the Players' Championship in Las Vegas, New York, Canada, and the Tour Championship in Hong Kong in that massive arena. You'll pay the extra production costs, will you, Joe, for ITV? Because that literally you're quadrupling the cost of covering those tournaments by putting them in those places. But anyway, he said, I'm possibly being overly ambitious, but I really think the sky's the limit with the World Snooker Tour currently, and sometimes less is more. I feel they could get away from invitational events and give the ranking tournaments a more global appeal. Ranking events are concentrated in the UK and China, with two in Germany and Saudi Arabia almost sticking out like a sore thumb. It'd be great to hear your take on this. Well, thank you, Joe. There's nothing wrong with the ambitions you have. I think what I would say is absolutely try and get... I actually had a dream there was going to be a tournament in India. These dreams are weird, aren't they? But anyway, there's nothing wrong with trying to have tournaments in the places you say, but don't move existing tournaments there. There's absolutely no reason to get rid of the British Open or the English Open. The thing about the home nations is, and it's kind of being talked down a little bit now, they had this season, across the four events, record ticket sales. It didn't matter who was playing or who wasn't playing. The demand in those areas, in Brentwood, in Edinburgh, in Belfast and in Clandidno, was huge for snooker. And on that basis, there's absolutely no reason to get rid of those tournaments. The market will decide. And the market in the UK, we had the tournament in Telford, which was really well attended. Ticket sales are going well in Manchester, I know, for the Tour Championship. So as long as people will come, keep the tournaments. Now, that's not to say we shouldn't then, as you say, take a few gambles, try and get events on in other parts of the world where people also hopefully will come. But I think where I would sort of diverge with your opinion is I wouldn't be getting rid of events in the UK. I would be trying to add to the tour by going to some of these other places. I think you do need a bedrock of tournaments that are proven to be successful. And listen, it's up to players. As I say, in Wales, O'Sullivan pulled out. I think Trump would have played had he not already won that Bet Victor bonus, but he'd won it and he felt he could take the week off. I'm not sure it particularly did his game any good not playing that week. He didn't seem that sharp when he came back, although he's, you know, as we speak, he's still going at the World Open. But it's up to them. But you can't... Here's the thing about Ronnie O'Sullivan, okay? And I think he's bigger than ever right now. I think he's the biggest he's ever been in terms of what he represents for the sport right now. He's the first choice for many people, probably most people, in terms of who you want to watch. But he's not the only choice. And in fact, at the UK Championship, Eurosport were interviewing some people in the crowd outside as they were coming in. And there was a woman there, she said, I'd love to see... Ronnie wasn't playing that day. She said, I'd love to see Ronnie, but if he's not playing, I'll watch someone else. So he's the first choice, but he's not the only choice. Snooker itself is popular, and a lot of that is down to him. But snooker itself is popular, and we saw that in Clandidno. Every session was basically full, and the two players you mentioned there weren't in it. So, to summarise, I don't want to see tournaments axed in the UK. I think there's still a vibrant scene here. I do want to see a greater international spread. That's what I was saying about the Riyadh event and other tournaments. Let's try and go to some of these places and make the tour a proper World Snooker Tour. There's a lot of work to be done on that. But you have to go where the interest is and where the money is. And certainly the investment currently is in China, and it would be foolish not to embrace that. Same with the Saudi Arabia. And if, you know, an American businessman comes forward and says, here's, you know, 10 million, I want a tournament, of course they'll go there. But at the moment that hasn't happened. I'm not sure Donald Trump is necessarily someone we want to be invoked in this way. I'm more of a Judd Trump man than a Donald Trump man, to be honest with you. Anyway, all interesting thoughts as ever. And when I said earlier, you know, about the good listening figures, it's entirely down to the listeners writing in. You know, we have a lot of interesting ideas and correspondence, and but for that, it would just be me talking to myself, which, you know, is not that entertaining. So thank you to everybody who's written in this week. Keep the iconic moments of the Crucible coming in. We've had a lot in, and we will have an episode, maybe in a couple of weeks, looking at all of that. We'll also hopefully have predictions for the World Championship with some experts. Let's not forget Phil Yates last year. His outsider was Luca Brasel. And believe me, he hasn't let anyone forget it. But that's it for this week. So correspondence to snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. That's snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. You can check out the other sports social podcasts on their network. Over 400. And yeah, the World Open concludes at the weekend. At the moment, it's building up nicely. So I think the tables are playing generously. I think we have a lot of centuries, but also when we say that, remember the players are really good as well. That's the thing. So you combine the two, of course, you're going to get a high standard. The cushions just seem a little soft, a little silky. The balls are sort of sliding in. Anyway, it's good stuff. Good crowds. I like the fact that they've got the crowds close to the action again. That creates a more intimate, a better feel, I think, around the venue. And it's been quite lively. The referees have been quite busy trying to just keep people still and keep them quiet. But, you know, we remember times in China when, you know, the atmosphere wasn't like that. And I think it's better this way than the other way. I think that's enough for this week. I'll be back next week. But for now, congratulations again to Liam Davis and indeed to Bayou Liu. On their successes last week. And from us all here, we say, as always, goodbye bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.